start with the set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your grace and mercy on me. Help us to glorify your message tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay. We finished the ABCs, and I'm going to go through tonight. We're talking about self-will and why it doesn't work. And I've been studying scriptures, as a lot of people have known, for years. And what's the difference between free will and self-will, and why doesn't it work? And that's what the next few pages in the big book are really all about. They're getting us ready to surrender. Now, what they're getting ready to surrender in the third step is not what you surrender in the first step. In the first step, it's not, if you've really hit bottom, it's not a voluntary surrender. You are surrendered. Alcohol is your master. It says that on page 8. Page 8 describes Bill Wilson in 1934 hitting what's called complete defeat. Have you ever heard that mentioned? Complete defeat is complete. It's not 80% defeat. And he says, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Anybody relate to that? That loneliness and despair, self-pity. How did this happen to me? I'm so wonderful. I tried so hard. How did I get in such a mess? Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. Now, we have younger people here, but I'm an old gomer. And when I was a kid, I used to watch those old Tarzan movies, and they would always end up where they would walk through the quicksand, and those poor carriers would get stuck in the quicksand. Quicksand is not good. And if it surrounds you in all directions, there's no way out. And that's how I felt when I hit complete defeat. And I had met my match. I'd been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. See, it wasn't a voluntary thing. He didn't wake up that day and say, I'm going to surrender. He was completely defeated. Now, the problem for Bill Wilson is that he had no solution because it was 1934. And he was sobered up on fear and self-knowledge for a little bit. And then God decided that alcoholics didn't need to die, and that he wanted to give spiritual principles to the world. And he figured alcoholics were the people to give it to because they'd be desperate enough to do it. So in 1934, in November, Bill was drinking himself to death. He had been a very successful man and a war hero, but he was dying. And a man named Ebbie Thatcher went to see him. And Ebbie Thatcher used to drink with Bill, and he was an alcoholic. And he used to, he was from a wealthy family. Bill Wilson, one of our founders, was not. He lived in Vermont, and he met Ebbie Thatcher and a man named Roland Hazard, and they would spend summers together. There was a lake there. And Ebbie Thatcher was dying, and he was going to be put in an asylum in Vermont because he had shot up the neighborhood and drove into somebody's house drunk, and in those days they put you in the asylum. And Roland Hazard was from a wealthy Providence family, very wealthy, and he was an alcoholic and he had gone to Switzerland in 1932. He was dying, and he met a psychiatrist by the name of Carl Jung, and Carl Jung worked with him for a year. He did therapy for a year, and he left the therapy and got drunk 3 days later. Some say a week, some say a month. Nobody really knows. But then he went back, and it's described in There Is a Solution, page 25 to 27, how we got the solution. Dr. Jung was a very renowned psychiatrist, and he was one of these people that knew he didn't know it all. And when Roland came back and told him he had gotten drunk, the doctor said, I didn't realize you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. There's no hope for you. Now, how can you do therapy for a year with someone and not know that they have the mind of a chronic alcoholic if you're this world-renowned psychiatrist? Well, because alcoholics don't tell the truth. And we don't even see the truth a lot of times. But, and he said, well, there's no hope for you. So Roland said, are there any exceptions? Does that sound like something an alcoholic would say? And he said, there are rarely, there are these phenomena. And this is all described in the book, but I've done it so much, I've got it all. He says, there have been these phenomena where people have had a rearrangement of their ideas and attitudes towards life. And they see things differently, and they can recover. But it's a phenomenon that's very rare. So Roland says, well, I go to church. He said, well, no, we're not talking about church. We're talking about something different, something that he couldn't explain, but that was the solution to alcohol. And what he was talking about was that a relationship with God that will allow God to direct your thinking and where he will tell you alcohol is a bad idea. And when you're living God-centered, then you're not going to seek the ease and comfort of alcohol because you're not going to have the irritable, restless, discontent feeling that alcoholics have when they're separated from God. Roland went back to New York and was part of the Oxford Group, which is our founding group, which is a group based upon Christians trying to live a sanctified life, trying to grow in relationship to their Creator. And so they had six steps that they worked to try to allow God to be their director and grow in the image and likeness of Christ. And Roland went to the meetings, and then he knew Ebby, and he heard Ebby was in trouble, so he went to Vermont, and the judge gave Roland Ebby. He said, take Ebby and take him out of the state. And so they took Ebby Thatcher to the Calvary Church in New York, where Reverend Shoemaker was the minister. And Ebby worked the steps. And after 60 days, they said, you need to go witness to someone. That was their 12th step. And so he went to Bill W. Now, how'd that work? Roland to Ebby to Bill to Dr. Bob 6 months later to us today. The hand of God. I read it in Romans 8:28, right, Stu? We read that today. The golden chain. And then how did the Oxford Group get to New York? Well, that was a whole other story of how Frank Buckman went to England and started this group to try to live on basic Christian principles and met Reverend Shoemaker in China in 1924, and then Reverend Shoemaker then brought the Oxford Group to New York, and then at the same time there was an Oxford Group in Akron where Dr. Bob was drinking and going to meetings, and Bill eventually met him, and we're here today. And so Ebby went to Bill and said, Bill, I've got a religious idea and a program of action. And then Bill argued with him. Bill had been drinking, and he argued with Ebby for hours about whether he really was going to allow God to run his life. And eventually Bill worked the steps, and we're here today. But Bill was a completely defeated man. And so he had complete defeat. I was completely defeated, and I was done. Now, I didn't wake up that morning and say I was going to be defeated today. I just figured I'd go on and muck it out till I died or something really bad happened. But that day, something happened. God worked in my life, and I could see the truth. We read tonight that there are those who cannot and will not give themselves to this simple program. Well, that's such a ridiculous statement. You're dying of alcoholism. Why can you cannot and will not do it? Because they can't see the truth of their situation. And that moment of complete defeat is when you see your truth. It's not something you can work on or study. You either see it or not. And that's a gift from God. But that won't keep you sober. That just allows you to seek the power to keep you sober. Does this make sense? And so we covered the ABCs, and they're read at every meeting. We read them tonight. Did Ann do a good job? Very good job, right? So the A is that I'm an alcoholic. I need to know that. I need to know what it means. I'm not going to go into that tonight. But you need to know why you're an alcoholic. If you don't know, read doctor's opinion. It tells you. And work with someone who can tell you what makes them an alcoholic. And then they could not manage their own lives. I could not manage my life sober. Now, we have two new people. They may not know this, but the disease of alcoholism doesn't occur when you drink. When you drink, it's just bad because you have an allergy to alcohol. So you can't control how much you drink. Anybody have that problem? But our problem is that we can't live sober. When we live sober without God, we get irritable, restless, and discontent. We get fearful, we get angry, and then our mind says, get a drink. Anybody have that? Now, when your mind says, get a drink, you have no power to say no to it. And so when people drink, and we look down on people who, quote, go out and drink. Well, that's what alcoholics do. I mean, we have a disease that we're powerless over. So the B is that no human power can do this. Sponsor can't fix you. AA group can't fix you. No human power, but the sponsor and the group can bring you to the power. You get it? And so hopefully we're bringing the power in the meeting tonight to somebody. We have some new people here. That no human power can relieve me of this. Now, I have no power not to drink today. Well, that sounds stupid, doesn't it? I'm not bragging, but it's the truth. I don't have any power, but I have the power to seek the power that gives me the choice in drink. So alcoholics can't control how much they drink, and they can't choose not to drink. Why? Because they're powerless. So that's a bad deal. If you can't control how much you drink and you can't choose not to drink, you're in bad shape. You're screwed, right? But there is hope for us. Because our disease has nothing to do with alcohol. Our disease has to do with our spiritual illness and our separation from God. And if we can treat that by allowing God to direct our lives, then alcohol doesn't come into the picture, you see? And it says God could and would if he were sought. God can and will relieve me of my alcoholism. And I need to seek him every day for the rest of my life. And if you're new, you have to start seeking with the desperation of a drowning man. And the solution to that is in the book, is in these pages, and we're on page 60, and from 60 to 88 is all the instructions you need to have a relationship with God. You'll never have to drink again if you do that. You keep doing it. 28 pages. When you have a new person, you think you're asking them to climb Mount Everest. But it's pretty simple. It's 28 pages. All the directions are here. So it says, and I want to talk tonight about self-will and what it really is versus what we talk about free will. Human beings like to think they have free will, but they don't. And then we're going to talk about God's will. So I'm going to explain what I'm talking about. So God couldn't would if he were sought. Does everybody agree with that? Now, if you're new, I'll tell you that's true because it's happened in my life. Happened to you, Paula? Grady, Bill, Stu, Dick, you see, we're witnesses to the fact that God can and will. And that's the power of the meetings. That's what the meetings are supposed to do. Show new people that there is a way out. And it says in the book, a way out on which we could all agree. So it says we're convinced we were at step three. So if you're convinced of those things, you're now at step three. Now step three is another type of surrender. Step three is where you're surrendering your free will or your self-will to God's will. You're making a decision to do that. Now, why would we want to do that? They're going to tell you why you want to do it, and then the how and why of it. So it says, we decided to turn my will, which is my thinking, and my life, which is my action, over to God as we understood him. So I don't want to have free will anymore, right? I want to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. So what do we mean by that? Just what do we do? Now, here's the first requirement if you want to recover from alcoholism. It says you have to be convinced that your life run on self-will can never be successful. You have to be convinced of that if you're going to make a decision that you don't want to run your life anymore. Now, how do you know to do that? How can you be convinced of that? Well, they're going to give you some information here, but you really get convinced of that when you do the fourth step out of the big book. When you look at all your resentments and your fear and how you harm people, you can see how when you're running the show and you're in self, you're full of anger, fear, and you harm people. And it can never be successful. Am I making sense so far? So it says, you have to be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Now, free will is not free. Free will just puts you in the bondage of self. See, people don't want to realize they want to have free will. And like I'm in the scriptures, a lot of people don't like the idea that they don't have free will to choose make decisions on their salvation, and they want to feel that they have a part in it. And human beings like to think that we have free will, but in AA, the free will and self, what we're talking about now is bondage to your self-centeredness. And if you're in free will and you're not in God's will, there's only two wills, God's will and your will. You can call it free yourself, whatever you want. But if you're not in God's will, and you're in your will, and you're an alcoholic, you're in trouble. And they're going to tell you why. So should we read on? Is that okay? All right, good. It says, if you're in self-will, you're always in collision with people. Anybody notice that? You're always getting in arguments. You're unsettled. People bother you. Anybody new here have people bother you? People at work, people in your life, people in relationships. And it says, even though your motives are good. Now that's nonsense. They're being funny because your motives are always self-centered. See, we think our motives are good, but they're self-centered. We think free will is good because it's my will, but it's not God's will. It's never going to work. And it says, we live by self-proportion, and we're an actor who wants to run the show. I tried to run the show, arrange the ballet, the scenery, everything in my own way. Now that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? But what's the problem with that? It says if the arrangements would only stay put, if people would only do as I want, then everything would be great and they would be pleased as well. That's what the book says, but that can't be. It says life would be wonderful. But what's wrong with the actor arranging the show? He's not the director. See, I'm the actor, and I'm trying to direct the world. Did anybody try to direct a relationship? Or the people at work? Or your family members? And we're not the ones that are responsible for them. We should be responsible for us. But we want to fix them so I'll be happy. Anybody try that? You have expectations? If the people at work would just do this, then my day would go great. Well, it doesn't work. So I decide that they've ruined my day. And then I get mad at them. Anybody ever do that? And then my day gets worse. But I could just say, well, they're doing the best they can. And so when I'm the actor running the show, that's the wrong way. But I lived my whole life that way and didn't realize it. You know why? I just wanted to be okay. I wanted to feel like I was okay. And I wanted people to love me and think I was a good guy. So I wanted to get approval from the world. Now that sounds good, but what you do when you do that is you make the world your higher power. You see how dangerous that is? And then if they're your higher power and they don't meet your expectations, then you get upset. Or you're afraid that you're not good enough for them or they're going to do something to you. So it says, what usually happens, the show doesn't come off. And the show of my life, I did a lot of good things, you know, but in general, I had trouble in relationships, and I was never quite content. I was never not uneasy. I was always a little uneasy, unsettled. And I didn't realize that that was an underlying fear. And that fear was because I was separated from God. I didn't realize that till I came to AA and worked the steps. And it says, no matter how hard we try, the play will not suit us. And it says, I become angry and indignant and self-pitying. So then they tell us what our basic trouble is on page 61. First 58 pages tell us what makes us an alcoholic and how we have an allergy to alcohol and we can't have the power of choice. But now it says, what is our basic trouble? It says, I'm a self-seeker when trying to be kind. Now what that means is I never did anything for anybody except trying to get something out of it. Unless Joe and Charlie says by mistake. Think about it. You're always trying to look good or make people get recognition. But you're always wanting to get something out of it. And here was I was a victim. Now a victim is not good. It means you're a gunshot victim. I was a victim of this delusion. I had this delusion in my idea. It was an idea in my head that was not based on anything real or any truths, that I could rest. Rest means you're going to rest, tear out satisfaction, happiness, if I just managed well. So when I was about 5 or 6, to get mother to love me, I was trying to fix the world so I would look good. From like 5, 6, or 7, I was an alcoholic way before I drank. Because I was seeking not a relationship with God, but I was seeking approval from other people. And what did I have to do? I had to get good grades. I had to get picked on the Little League team, blah, blah, blah. It was endless. And it worked out some, but I was never really content. I would be content for a while. Anybody have that? But then I would worry about, maybe it's going to not be so good, or that's going to happen. And so I don't want to live that way anymore. And then it says we're self-centered. And we talk about that a lot. Now, what does self-centered mean? It means I'm centered on me. I am the center of my universe. Now, who is the center of the universe? God. So when Michael was the center of the universe, Michael was really crazy. You see how insane we are? I'm the center of the universe, but God's the center of the universe. Now, when you're the center of the universe, you don't realize it, but you've put yourself in a world that doesn't exist. So I lived in this world where Michael was the center of the world. I was running the show, and it didn't really exist except in my head. And when I lived in that world, I never was okay. You see, and I had fear, and I was angry, and I made bad decisions. Now, I wasn't a bad person. I was just in the wrong world. Now, who put me in that world? I did, because I didn't know any better. If I want to manage the world to be happy and satisfied, and I'm the only one that can do it. My motives were good, right? But no, because they were centered on me. So you live in this world where you're the center of it and it doesn't really exist. Now, when you stay in that world, you're going to drink. That's what alcoholism is. You're in a world that doesn't exist where you're the center and things don't go well, and you're going to drink. It's guaranteed. And if you don't drink and you stay sober, you're going to be miserable. And so it says, selfishness, self-centeredness, this is the root of my whole problem. That Michael has, when you come in here, you come in here with a tree. And your tree is planted in soil. And when your tree, you look at the tree of new people, and it looks like crap. Because it's full of character defects. It's full of resentment and fear and the leaves and bad decisions. And what AA is telling is you need to replant your tree into different soil, God's soil. So I lived in a world where God didn't exist, and I planted my tree in a world where God wasn't the soil. And so I wasn't a bad person, I just had the wrong manager, which was me. So what they're saying is basically fire yourself, and you have to move out of this world that doesn't exist. Now, how do you want to move out of the world where you're the center of the universe into the real world? Do you wake up one day and say, oh, I'm in the wrong world. I gotta move into the real world. No, pain. You're in a lot of pain and you're miserable and you can't go on anymore and you're completely defeated. And you come to AA and they say, well, in AA, you know, we believe in a power greater than ourselves and we've been where you are and we're gonna make a decision now that we're not going to be in that world anymore. So the first three steps enable you to move out of this world and want to go into a different world. Now, some people don't really like that world that they've created, but they don't want to leave it. Well, they never make it. They do half measures. They'll put their feet out a little bit. They'll walk out of it for a day or two, but they want to stay in that world. And when they're in that world, they have no power over alcohol. And life will never go the way they want it. And so the first three steps are designed to get you to move out of that world. And 4 through 9 are designed to get you into the real world where God exists. And we call it the world of the Spirit on page 84. And when you're in the world of the Spirit, it says you will react sanely to alcohol. You won't be in conflict with everybody and everything. And you'll have a power that can keep you in, help you react differently than you used to. So this is the whole deal. And so they're telling you that, you know, you're in this world of self-centeredness, and that's the root of your trouble. And your troubles are basically of my own making. It says that in the book. Now, how can that be true? Why is that a great promise? Because if I'm the one that made the trouble, then I'm the one that can change. If my troubles are because of them, I can't change. And then it says, I'm an extreme example of self-will run. Now, I've met a lot of people who have self-will run pretty high, but we're riotous. And so it says, we have to be rid of this or we're going to die. That's what it says. So you have to move out of that world or you're going to die. And they say, who makes it possible? God does. So then the how and why of it, to finish up, is that we have to quit playing God, it doesn't work. In the drama of life, God's going to be in charge, not me. And it says, this is the idea, this is the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which I'm going to build the freedom. So I'm moving through, building this arch to move from that world where I'm the center to God's world. And then 10 and 11 is how you stay in that world the rest of your life. When you're in that world, your life is pretty good. You have some peace and serenity. And so when we're in self-will, or what we call free will, we say this prayer on page 63, I'm not going to go into tonight, that we have to want to be relieved of the bondage of self. Have you ever heard that? And the bondage of self is just in my free will, where I'm choosing what I need and what I want, what I need to have happen. And when I'm in the free world, I'm in my universe and not God's universe. And normal people have the same problem, but you can't explain it to them. They look at you like you're crazy because they're not alcoholics. They don't understand powerlessness and the unmanageability of their lives. And so when do you get to have your will back? We can use our will, but we get our will back on page 85. And it says, we have a daily reprieve from our alcoholism based on maintaining this fit spiritual condition, this staying in the world of the spirit, this relationship with God. And on that second paragraph, it says, we're not cured. But it says, every day I must carry a vision of God's will in all my activities. Now, before I came in here, I carried my vision of my will in all my activities. In fact, I still do today. You know, I may go to the food store and I'm waiting in line too long, or they're out of the stuff that I want, or, you know, she's nagging me again, I'm going too fast, you know, or I'm going too slow, I can't make up my mind anymore. And, but I must carry a vision of God's will in all my activities. It says must, His will not mine be done, how can I best serve thee? So we go from coming into AA, and step three is about, I want to leave this world. I don't want to live in that world where I'm the center of it anymore. It's never going to work. I want to live in God's will. And then it says if you take this third step, then you're ready, next and at once, to face and be rid of the things that are blocking you from getting into God's world. And that's what steps 4 through 9 are. And it says, I must carry a vision. And it says, these thoughts must go with me constantly. So my constant thoughts every day, and I gave you the card, the left-hand side is God's will. I must carry this vision into all my activities. And it says, this is the exercise of the proper use of the will. So I can use my will, quote, free will, as long as it's aligned with God's will. And I don't want to use my will when it's not aligned with God's will. Now, how will I know when I'm using my will? I won't feel good. Disturbed. Disturbed, right, Paula? We're disturbed. We get pissed off. We get fearful. We react poorly. And so, exercise a willpower along this line, all you wish. It's the proper use of the will. So AA, the big book, really has the key for what Scripture's talking about. Are you worshiping, Paul says in Romans, are you worshiping the flesh and the things of the flesh, or you're worshiping the spirit and the things of the spirit? Doesn't mean you get perfect. But what's the center of my universe today? It's really God, serving God. And before I came in here, it was me, and I didn't even realize it. And alcohol is not in the equation. Now, alcohol will come into the equation if I stay in my world long enough, I'll feel bad enough, and then my mind will say, get a drink. That's probably better than staying sober for years and being miserable and making everybody around you miserable. And so, I hope this was helpful. I was thinking about what to do because I've been through these pages so much, but I wanted to try to talk about free will and self-will and why it doesn't work. And we have free will. God will let us have free will. He'll let us separate from us. And it says on page 88, this is how He disciplines us, because when I'm in free will, I don't feel good. And then I want to come back to Him. So we have free will and we have self-will, but it's never going to work for me if it's not aligned with God's will. And so each day I try to stay in that world. All right, thank you.